My name is Mary Schramm, and this is a forum titled, Where Do You Get Your Nurture or Your Energy? I need to tell you that our son Mark came into the village today, and when he looked at the board and saw that I was moderating a forum on where you get your energy, he really laughed. He said, I can't believe anyone that goes to bed at 9:30 every night and looks like a Geritol ad person would be leading a forum on nurture and energy. I assured him that pastors usually preach about things that they need to hear about. Most preachers, I understand, speak more to themselves than they do to the congregation. So perhaps I agreed to lead a discussion tonight on nurture and energy because I am in great need of discovering that source for myself. I'm going to be talking about burnout tonight. And I'm sorry it's not as controversial a subject as the forum was last night. I just couldn't think of nurture and energy as being very much of a white-knuckle session, as we call it in Poland. And forums, I think, are to be as they were last night. So perhaps this falls somewhere between forum and session. I want to give you time to discuss. I want to present a few things. I want you to discuss some more, and then we'll sum things up. When I looked up the word burnout in the dictionary, it says it's a thing that happens when your fuel is exhausted. And I think this happens especially to people who are in the caring, helping, healing kinds of professions. I belong to an ecumenical community of people. There are 40 of us in the community. And one night for worship, the worship centered around your vocation, what do people do for their work. And as we went around and every person said where they worked, I was absolutely astonished that the world was in such bad shape as it was, because here were 40 people, with very few exceptions, who worked with mentally retarded, with mentally ill adults, 3 nurses who worked on oncology wards with dying children, social workers, people who were completely involved in peacemaking activities, except for myself, who managed a bookstore restaurant, and one roofer. I think everybody else was in some kind of caring, healing kind of profession or vocation. And I thought, why is it that our community of 40 people are so involved in those kinds of service things? Why do they come to the community? And I decided it's because most of us experience burnout in those kind of jobs, and that we need the support and the nurture of others. I think John mentioned in one of his sessions that when we were in Washington, D.C. during the late 60s and early 70s, a Roman Catholic priest friend of ours said, most of my liberal friends are now basket cases. Because they didn't have the rootedness or the constant source of energy it took to be constantly active in the world and being concerned about a world that was hurting. Now, if you're just the kind of person that sits and sits and sits and isn't very active in the world, I'm not sure this forum is for you. But I want to direct it to people who really do genuinely feel stressed out and burned out much of the time. I love the line in Alice that Alice has in Through the Looking Glass. She says, it takes all the running that you can do to keep in one place. And if you want to get any place, you have to run twice as fast. And that's just how I feel many days. So I guess that's why I'm interested in having people discuss this with me. I feel like I run and run and run just to stay in the same place. For a definition, I would like to suggest that burnout is a condition of the heart when we stop functioning at our loving, faithful best. Our fuel is gone, we're exhausted, we're overextended, we feel overworked, we feel put upon, we feel that everything falls upon our shoulders, and therefore we get angry and resentful. And many of us try to hide by creating some kind of idols as a diversionary tactic, just like the children of Israel did when they built their golden calf. Or Ernst Becker says, we drink or drug ourselves into oblivion, or we go shopping, which is the same thing. Or like David, we desire our Bathsheba. But we try to do something to divert ourselves, to build some kind of a job or an idolatrous situation in our life that is going to divert us and we hope will give us energy and strength that we don't have. And to make matters worse, much of the time I find that I'm living in the thick of thin things. I run a restaurant and a bookstore, or I help to manage it. And the things that get me most upset are the stupid ice machine that always stops making ice at 12:15, right in the heat of battle. Or a customer that wants a book and has to have it by such and such a date and the stupid book doesn't arrive. Or our volunteer servers fail to show up. Or my husband, who is a pastor, says, you know, the acolytes don't come, the mimeograph machine doesn't work, the copier is on the blink. The kids are going on a field trip and they're smoking pot in the bus. As one pastor said, you know, it's not the faith that gives me trouble, it's the faithful. All of these things that really aren't so consequential, but they seem to be very, very large. And when you put them all together in your day, we experience burnout. And that's what we need to address. If this happens to you, how, where, with whom do you get your energy and your nurture? Do you bowl? Do you jog? Do you sing? Do you listen to music? Do you pray? Do you make love? What is it that gives you your energy and your nurture? Would you please, for a few minutes, get in groups of threes and discuss with one another when you feel most stressed out, when burnout happens in your life, if it does, and how you resolve that. What is the thing that honestly gives you the most excitement, the most nurture, and is most energy producing for you? Talk to two other people, please. Let's share with the others some of the ways that you get your energy or are nurtured. Just yell out some things. And does everybody get energized by coming to Holden Village? Some in some ways and some in other ways. Okay, what else?
Exercise.
Okay.
Music.
How many people said exercise in some way? What kind of exercise?
Hard exercise.
Walking, running, walking,
swimming,
swimming, dancing, handball, basketball,
basketball.
Music, someone said. Music, playing, listening to it. How many of you have music as the thing that soothes the savage breast? Okay, what other categories?
Reading.
What do you read?
Variety of things.
Books,
but
books. About your type of person.
Novels, good novels.
Escape
the poetry we have.
Arthur Grant.
Yeah.
You're
good.
Does anybody read things other than light literature or poetry for nurture in there? What kind?
Magazines?
Bible. Bible reading, devotional material, other things.
Talking to a close friend.
Pardon?
Talking to a close friend.
Talking to a close friend.
Bring some kind of reading journals.
You journal? Okay, that's kind of there. How many of you journal? Daily journal, keep a journal.
I'll say daily.
Weekly monthly journals.
Yeah.
Other things that aren't up here.
Gardening.
Prayer. Yeah. You said
eating pizza.
Different people have different dietary habits.
I pet my cat.
You pet your cat?
Yes.
And what did somebody else decide to solve?
Vacations.
Vacations?
Hobbies.
I think.
Painting, sorry.
How father?
Looking at beautiful things.
Pulling back.
Pulling back, solitude.
Country.
All right, I think.
Drives in the country. Drives in the country or something like that.
Scenery.
What did you say in the country?
Drives.
Drives out the country or something. All right, so there are a variety of ways that people get their nurture and their energy. I'm going to take a few minutes now to give you the thing that gives me energy and just have you respond. It's not something I do, but it's something that I think about, that I remind myself about. And I've discovered, especially in the past 2 years, that it's been very, very helpful as far as my nurture is concerned. In the middle of the Gospel of Mark, there is a continental divide, kind of a watershed that happens. In the 8th chapter, beginning at the 27th verse, Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And the disciples say, "Oh, some say John the Baptist, some say prophet, some say Elijah." That's fine as long as it's out there. Who do other people say that I am? And then Jesus says, "But who do you say that I am?" And they answer, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, as Christians, I think that's a very important question when it comes to energy and nurture. I think we would all say, "I agree to that. I know it. I really believe it." But do we live as if we said Jesus is Lord of our life, as the early Christians did? Is the Christ, Jesus the Christ, really the one in control of my economic life, my political life, my sexual life, my spiritual life, my workaday life? When I say, if I answer with Peter and the disciples, "You are the Christ," I am in essence saying, therefore, God is in charge. And it's not so much a belief question for me as a belief question as it is a trust question. Where am I really going to put my trust? And how often, how many times a day do I have to remind myself that I am not responsible for producing gifted children, for saving the world, for making everything that I do turn out all right? For me, there's a tremendous amount of freedom in reminding myself that I really do want God to be in charge. And I know you've probably heard this often at Holden, and I hope you hear it in your own congregations and understand that God calls us to be faithful people, not to be effective. If in our faithfulness it is an effective act, that's fine. But God doesn't send us out each day and say, "Mary, I want you to go out now and be the most successful person you can be." That puts a tremendous burden on my shoulders because I can't possibly take my discipleship and my actions each day and make sure it's going to be kind of a successful venture or that it will even be effective. If God can use that, fine, but that's not what I'm called to be. I don't have to prove myself to anyone. God simply asks me to express myself. And that just is a very freeing gospel word for me. It really gives me energy. God has given me gifts and talents and abilities and said, "You go out and use those things in my kingdom work in your daily life. That's all I expect you to do. I expect you to express who you are with those gifts that I have given you. I do not expect you to have to prove your worth as an individual." because I loved you, I made you the way you are, I loved you so that I redeemed you, I loved you so much, I come to live in your very house. How can I better say to you, daughters and sons, that I love you? You don't have to prove anything to me. In fact, my image at the end of the day is that God takes my discipleship, my actions, and they're all in God's hands, and God looks at them and blows. And much is like chaff, which kind of scatters all over, but there are a few seeds left in God's hands, and God looks and says, well, for heaven's sakes, Mary, there are a few things here I can use in my kingdom. Thanks. Most of it's a bunch of bull, but that's all right, too. You know, try again tomorrow. If I live any other way, I play God, because it's not up to me to determine the outcome of my actions. You know, Jacob learned the hard way. Remember how all night long he wrestled with God, trying to maintain his strength and his control? And he was left with a decided limp in the morning. But he had a new name. It was changed from Jacob to Israel, and Israel means God rules. And I sometimes feel like I am left with a decided limp in my life, but I hope to goodness I know that God rules in my life. At St. Martin's table, there's a lot of conversation that goes on, and a woman came to me about 6 months ago. She said, someone suggested that I come and visit with you. I have a very serious problem. And when I heard the woman's problem, it was a very serious problem. And I'm not a counselor, and I didn't really know how to deal with this woman. And she would come in about twice a month, and I got to almost dread when she came because her problem was so severe. She was seeing having counseling. She was a counselor herself. I knew I couldn't be a counselor, but about the third or fourth time she came in, when I thought, oh no, it's her day to come in again, I just hate this, she sat down and said, Mary, you know, of course, that you don't have to heal me. And that was the most freeing thing that woman could have said to me. And I thought, I know that. Why do I act as if I have to heal this woman or take care of her very severe problem? I could help, I didn't have to cure. I could listen, I could care, but curing was up to God. So for me, that's a very important thing to remember when it comes to getting energy. I want to save the world from nuclear disaster, and I work my head off in all kinds of ways to save the world from nuclear disaster. And every once in a while, I have to sit back and say, wait a minute. It's not my responsibility to do this. It's up to God. I can do my thing, but I don't have to worry. I can trust that God is in charge. There's a new book out called Blessed Assurance. Have any of you read it? Or it was reviewed on National Public Radio and in the Wall Street Journal and in the New Yorker. And I'm sorry I don't remember the author's name. It's a woman, A. Grace. The last name starts with an M, and it's like M-A-J-H-O-B-I-A or something. I couldn't pronounce it, so it didn't stick with me. She's a Jewish woman. I've only gotten two-thirds of the way through the book, so I can't tell you how the book ends. She's a Jewish woman who teaches at Hunter. She went down to write an article on the people in Amarillo, Texas, who work at the Pantex plant, where they do the final assembly of nuclear weapons. It's the only place in the United States where nuclear weapons are finally assembled. And the white train that comes up to the peninsula outside of Seattle goes out twice a week from the Pantex plant and in 12 locations in the United States takes nuclear warheads. And she wanted to know about people who work there. How could they put these weapons together? What did they think? And she discovered that Amarillo, Texas is a very, very conservative, fundamentalist, religiously group of people. And in all the people this woman interviewed, except for Bishop Mathiasen, the Roman Catholic bishop, there was not one person who spoke to the morality of what they were doing. Most people said, It's just a job. I don't think about what we're doing. This place was a dusty old little ghost town before Pantex came. It's all an economic thing. We don't think of it in terms of morality. And she discovered that their personal morality and their public morality were two different things. But the point I want to make is that most people there, and there, it's not a very large town, and many, many hundreds of churches in Amarillo, Texas. Most people said, in essence, God is in charge. There is really nothing we can do to stop the arms race. Jesus is coming again, and according to Scripture, the world will be destroyed by fire, and this is probably how it's going to happen. And some people even said, and thank God we'd be in ground zero, because if the Soviets ever attack, Amarillo is probably going to get it first, and we don't want to survive, to be a survivor. Now, that really causes me to think a lot. And so I guess what I want you to discuss now is to look at that tension, that stress that we have, that burnout that we experience because we are active in a hurting world. And yet, if my premise for me is right, that I can say God is in charge, how am I any different from the people in Amarillo, Texas, who are not involved in disarmament, or in a nuclear freeze, or in working to eliminate weapons, because they are so sure that God is in charge? Does that make sense? How do you take care of yourself, be active in the world, and yet say God is in charge? We have 25 minutes to figure it out. Do you want to go in groups for a few minutes?
Yeah.
Or just... All right, let's 3 minutes or 4 minutes, and then we'll come back and say, then everybody gets a chance to talk. Okay, who wants to comment? You buzzed in little groups, so let's hear something.
I do. I overheard talking here and here.
No, we can't hear.
Oh, I heard talking from people up here, and a general theme of what we were talking about is being co-creators with God, that if we align ourselves with God's will, that He will work in that will with us. And this woman here was reading out of Isaiah, where
Ezekiel.
You want to?
I'm trying to find the verse, but I can't find it now.
I'll paraphrase what she said. Ezekiel is saying that if Israel turned from its evil ways, then I, God, will not have to cause evil to come upon it. Being that God responds to our moves and will do good with us or do ill with us according to His purpose. And I seem to want to think of, you know, what you sow, therefore you shall reap. What you give into the system, that's going to come out. That's a theme that I heard here.
The people in Amarillo, Texas believe that God's will was being done by not being concerned about what they were doing, because God was in charge. How do we align ourselves with the will of God? I mean, maybe that's a whole other forum, but maybe that's not the direction we want to go. But I think there's still a problem.
Yeah, it's easy.
Part of the problem is that each of us needs to feel that he makes some difference. Human beings can't go along doing the work that they do without feeling that they're doing some good, or that whatever they're applying their energies to makes a difference. I suppose the crux of it might be that while we need to feel that way, none of us should feel that he makes all the difference. You need to feel he makes some difference, but you can't feel that you make all the difference. And that's the trap we get into. That sometimes you get into feeling that I make all the difference. And if I don't do this thing, the world's going to go to pot.
Okay. Other comments?
To relate your Amarillo idea. In Seattle, we have Boeing Airplane Company, and it's commercial and military. And I'm sure there's no greater burnout in the people that are put on the military assignments than those put on commercial assignments. They have a job to do, and each one of them feels that it's maybe one person that wouldn't like their job may go up to their boss and say, I don't believe in this military assignment. Could I be transferred to commercial? Maybe there's no jobs available. And I think that relates a little bit to your Amarillo. Mm-hmm.
It certainly does.
They do their job and do it the best they can.
It's interesting that you brought that up because we happen to have a brother-in-law who was just in that position at Boeing in Seattle and was in the military end of it and went down and saw a warhead let off and was so upset by it that he did go back to Boeing and say, I'm sorry, I cannot do this anymore, I need a new assignment, and was given one. He just could not sleep with the fact that that was how he was earning his money. So you can make a statement by that. I think he was probably willing to risk losing the job because he could not put up with that. I think that we can't hide our heads in the sand either and expect that God is going to cure everything, because I think he has given us a free will. And we do need to use our free will and to try to make judgments with his help, but not to say he's going to do it all for us.
Is part of our problem with burnout and stress the fact that so many times we need to be in control? When I look at most of my burnout, it's the fact that I feel I have to control this situation. I can't let go of it. And for me, that's where saying, wait a minute, I'm not in charge, or I can't do everything, I can do one thing, is important. Now, for you that are managers or in charge of other people or executives, can you do that? Pastors here, can you let go of some of the things that cause you the kind of stress?
I think that's one of the burdens in ministry. The whole senior minister model puts a heavy amount of stress on that person and doesn't really free that person to allow, say, the associate minister to be creative. So I'm looking for new models of ministry, co-ministry, where, in a sense, we're all equal in creation. Then we should try to live as equally together and try to mirror that in ministry, but that isn't mirrored very often in ministry. I've seen a lot of burnout among so-called senior ministers. They have to be perfect. They have to have all the answers. They have to control. And it not only burns them out, but it obliterates the people who are working with them.
Mm-hmm. And their job is to equip the saints for their ministry. Mm-hmm. And as lay people, we put that burden on our pastors many times, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There seem to be two things that go on. I do family therapy, and I spend sometimes half an hour in prayer with people, more on the inner journey that they go on. And it used to be that I would feel my guts just draining, like, is this going to happen somehow? And I went and had severe burnout, so that I couldn't digest food, and I couldn't get up in the morning. It took half an hour, and I couldn't live by my will anymore. So I had one choice which said, I want to be really responsible, but I had another choice that said, I have to allow God to work through me. As I'm losing my train of thought, because, oh, I know, there were decisions I wasn't making that I needed to make. And so it was an odd kind of thing, because the staff that I work with pretty much stood on the authority of psychology and not on the authority of Christ, yet it's a Christian agency. And I had to confront them and say, I am alone here, I get no support from you. And they got very angry, and then they wept. And I had to confront every member of my family and
get all the games out in the open that I thought I had already exposed intellectually, but I hadn't given up emotionally taking charge of it. So I had to give up territory, but I had to claim my power. And the hardest thing of all was to realize that I had started to take control as a very young child. I had dreams about myself as an infant, but I had begun to take charge of my family. And to go that far back inside and let go was like I would disappear. But the ego had to die, and I dreamt that I was dying. And I would wake up, God, you know. And the doctor said, we're talking life force here. You have got to let go. And I think it's that going to the cross that is so scary. And that ego is like, there won't be anything left of me. And so there was that two-way thing going on. The claiming power, but it had to be lined up with God. And I think I read John 17 20 times a day for a year, because if there's a senior pastor at all, it's Christ. And he didn't do anything without the Father, and he didn't minister alone. He always worked with twos or more. And here I am trying to do this job all alone. So I pretty much gave it over to the client from then. I said, you and God are going to work this out. I'm a tool helper. You know, what are you going to do about this situation? It's a tremendous relief.
Thank you for sharing. Henry now has a beautiful section in the Genesee Diary. He went to his spiritual director and said, why is it that I am so exhausted every time I deal with people? They just wear me out. And his spiritual director said, it's because each time you're with someone, you have to prove that you're worth being with. And that really hit me. I thought, that's why I'm so exhausted. I've got to make sure that you're not wasting your time visiting with me, or that I'm really a very worthwhile person, and you're going to really be glad that you spent 5 minutes with me. That is just so stressful and saps so much energy from us. That letting go, that being able to say, I don't have to be in charge of anything, is very, very important. I don't know whether my... Mark, are you here?
Yes.
Oh. I will tell a story. This is a confession to my son. I just spent 3 days with he and Candace, and neither one of them likes to cook, so I was really concerned about their eating habits. And I told John 2 nights ago, I had this horrible nightmare where I was trying to prepare food. I was in the inner city of Washington, D.C. People kept coming in off the street, taking the food before it was properly prepared and nicely put on the plate, and they just kept ruining the food that I was trying to put out. And I woke up just sweaty and just almost crying. I was so angry. And I analyzed that dream from 5 till 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm not a dream analysis, but I decided it was that I didn't have control over Mark and Candace's diet. I can control what my 30-year-old kid eats. I have a long way to go in needing to be in control or proving myself in some way. And that just, it's very exhausting. So I throw that out as more an attitude than something we do. Other comments?
I live here in Washington State, and we have a lot of, I'm very much aware of the defense industry in the state. And everybody is always saying, well, it's such good money, it's such good money. We've got to have the money, and that somehow makes it okay because God wants to have this, get into all those trips. I keep hearing that thing about how good the money is, and I sometimes struggle with the guy that works a 40-hour week that has to support his $20,000 4x4 or Chevrolet, whatever. And I keep seeing that as Americans, we are tied up in our idolatrous love of our culture and the good material things and the good material life, and the fact that we live so high on the scale of 80% of the world's energy we consume in this one nation. And I think that level is something that has to be addressed to address the problem of the good Christian people who build the bombs in Texas. It's all tied into that, because they need the money at that plant to pay the mortgage, to pay the plants, and to pay the bills, and to buy the 4x4s. And just one of my perspectives I'm throwing out to add to address that.
And it's more,
the economy.
It's more important than life, too.
Yes.
In Nevada, at the nuclear test site, those people are paid lots of money, too, but they're going to die of it. which is why they're being paid lots of money. Those people are all dying of leukemia. And the test site workers live in a town where children aren't even allowed to live.
Other things? Yes?
I was thinking when you were talking about Dan and the building of the warheads that those people are not going to be the people that are going to stop that from happening. It's going to be other people. It's going to be someone outside of there. The same people that work at Bangor can't stop the white train. I think in an environmental movement that aside from the nuclear thing, which is all involved in it too, but I was thinking about the old growth timber and the foresters out here who think that they won't have their job if they can't cut down every last old growth tree that's available, you know, under the particular government agency that they can cut them all down. And there are those that are going to think, well, what are they going to do when they're all cut down? Let's start doing that now instead of after the others are cut. They can't be the ones to stop it. They are the ones to say, I don't care about those stupid owls. I want my job. And those of us that can see the stupid owls are going to say, you can't have all of the stupid owls. You know, we're going to have some left. You can't kill everything. We're not going to let you. It has to be that those of us that see it, because I think that people that are without a job, they're paralyzed. They can't function. And in this society, if you don't have a job, you're like you're dead, both to yourself and other people. It's too hard. You just can't do it. You can't do it by yourself.
Yeah.
And after all, the people at Pentax and Boeing and at a test site are being paid with our money to do what they do, allegedly, on our behalf.
64% of every tax dollar you pay goes to defense. So we can't point our finger and say, oh, the immorality of the people that put together the weapons. What about us? And if you see that something, you feel it is not the will of God for us, you do like Luther and you say, I'm going to take my stand right here with this group of people who's going to support me, and I'm going to say no. And I know it's not going to change the world, and it might not bring the kingdom of God, but I think we each have a responsibility to take our stand where we see it. To say that God is in charge is not a reason for inactivity. It's being co-creators. Yeah.
I think we were talking before about stress of jobs and things. I think the most stressful job I've ever had is raising teenagers. Teenagers, and it's a time when we have to let go. We have to let go of the control, and listening to them, we find that out, but it just gets harder. And Andy had told them for the first time, and I'm from Chicago, and when we took a plane and came up here in the mountains, within 5 minutes, my children were gone. I didn't know where, I didn't know what. And I really think that Holden does a good job of modeling that it's okay to let them go. Because I didn't know it at the time, but they're very safe, and they're growing, and they're learning from their peers. But it was my first lesson that letting go is how to grow. But it's the hardest one.
Yes.
I think this business of co-creation needs to be taken really very seriously. And I think that Christ, for whatever reason, in his inscrutable will, does choose to work through us. And I think that does put quite a bit of responsibility on us. And I don't care if it's people in Amarillo, or taxpayers, or people raising teenagers, or people working in the church. I get very impatient, I think, with people who I think tend to be complacent. And it seems to me that And we have been given gifts. And we have some kind of intelligence that we should be using. And we should not be satisfied with the things that we see around us and the things that we do. And we should not be satisfied when we are not being effective. And I think we need to pay much more attention to that. And I think we may need to pay much more attention in our congregations to how ineffective we are and how stupid we are and how unintelligent we go about our work. And we need people to ram that down our throats.
Sounds very Lutheran.
We also need them, having done this and having honestly faced these things, I think then we need to face the fact and the reminder that God does not expect us to be successful. He sure doesn't expect us to be stupid. But when we honestly look at these things, then I think we can say that we try to be faithful. And the results are entirely in His hand. But most of the time, we are too content to say, well, God, it's up to you.
It's 10 o'clock, and I thank you for coming. I appreciate your attendance.